Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1972. The album is An Evening with Groucho. The artist is Groucho Marx, and my guest is Zach Sherwin. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jason.
So, number one, okay, first of all, people will recognize you from Epic Rap Battles of History. You also are a staff writer for Epic Rap Battles of History. What other things might people know you from, just in case they've never heard your name before?
I make videos for my rap songs and put them up on YouTube.
Yes.
So some of those are things that people might have seen.
Yes.
I have albums out on Comedy Central Records and A Special Thing Records.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe people have heard those. Let's see. What else have I done? I've been on The Pete Holmes Show and Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably enough things for now. I do other things too, but that's a good sampling.
Why did you pick this album? Did you pick it because it was Groucho or because you'd heard it before or anything?
No, I'd never heard it before.
Okay.
I was raised, I mean, the Marx Brothers are, there were actually a lot of, to take listeners behind the curtain a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you sent me a spreadsheet of different album covers that I could choose from
us
to talk about. And many of them were from, like, people that I was brought up with.
Yeah.
And I wanted to choose something that was familiar, but also not. I was very tempted to go with an Alan Sherman record because his comedy songs were like a big part of my upbringing.
Sure, sure.
But I thought it's a little too, I'm going to know everything, and I don't want to just listen to a bunch of Alan Sherman songs that I could like sing by heart.
Yeah.
So I wanted to choose something that I'd have a little bit of familiarity with, but different. And so the Marx Brothers were a big part of my upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
But I was excited at the opportunity to just get Groucho.
Yeah.
I knew he was like a master raconteur
mm-hmm.
and a wordsmith and just enjoyed the kind of quick, silly joke that I think is wonderful. And I was like, all right, I'm going to experience Groucho in a new way.
So yeah.
That's why I chose this record.
What was your first impression after listening to it?
I literally finished, so you sent it to me in four parts, and I didn't have a chance to listen to part four until the drive here. So I'm fewer than 10 minutes off of hearing the end of it.
Uh-huh.
I was very tempted after a few minutes into it,
mm-hmm.
I have so much to say about it, to Google it and learn what the hell it is.
Right.
And I made myself not, because I figured you were going to have information about it, and I would rather learn on the actual podcast.
I do have some. I don't have a whole lot. And
I'm blown away to learn that it was 1972.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's intro'd by Dick Cavett, and Dick Cavett is a guy who I love, but is also like, he loves the fact that he knows Groucho Marx and gets to talk about it. Like,
he
I mean,
that,
why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And also another thing, in case you guys aren't familiar, friend of the show, Dave Hill, is now kind of the Dick Cavett to Dick Cavett's Groucho Marx, if that makes sense. Dave Hill interviews him a bunch in New York, and they hang out, and they're friends, and it's kind of weird.
You're kidding.
Yeah, no, they're good friends. I'm trying to find, actually, Bill Cosby. Nope, don't need to see that picture. I was trying to find, because I know when I read through this book, which is called The Groucho File, there's a lot of
That's P-H-I-L-E.
Picture content. Yes, P-H-I-L-E.
It also is kind of a Groucho File from the looks of it.
It's exactly right. There's bits, I feel like there are bits about it in here, but I don't have enough information, other than it was just a celebration of Groucho.
Yeah, it was clearly, I thought it was going to be, I was like, wow, Groucho, I guess, did stand up. Let's hear an hour of Groucho's, you know, A material
mm-hmm.
put together for this special. But it's more like a victory lap for
100%.
A beloved old, he sounds old.
He sounds so old, and that's so, like, I remember when I first heard it, like, years ago, I was like, oh, this is sad, I can't, and then eventually I listened to it all, I'm like, okay, it's not that sad, but it's just unexpected.
It's like a beloved old comfortable slipper that you're putting on rather than hearing someone dazzle. Like, you have to have already think, you have to already have an opinion that's everything you think about Groucho.
Yeah.
Because the crowd is, it is by no means him bombing. Like, he's crushing.
No, yeah, 100%.
With references that do not all resonate to the modern era,
no.
I have to say.
No. Yeah.
Can we jump in and talk about that Dick Cavett thing a little
bit? Yes, yeah, 100%.
Dick Cavett opens by recounting a story where Groucho tells what would now be considered, like, definitely a politically incorrect
mm-hmm,
joke.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a homophobic joke? I don't know, you know?
Right.
It's not for me to decide that.
Sure.
But, I mean, I'll just say for the listeners that the story is that they went to a restaurant one time, and Groucho says to the captain of the New York restaurant, and, like, the maitre d' come over. And Groucho says, do you have a fruit you'd suggest? And I'm not talking about the captain.
Right.
And the crowd
they loved it.
Goes nuts.
Yeah, horribly inappropriate.
It's just a funny, it's like a weird note to start on.
It really is. It is very, it's also Dick Cavett wanting a laugh, probably.
Yeah.
I love Dick Cavett, again, but it's like oh, I'm here with Groucho. I might as well. But he did it via Groucho, I guess, so it's like, nah, it's his joke. Thank you for him, I think he says at one point. But yeah, it is a weird note. There's a couple Polish jokes in here, too. Yeah. I mean, it's... Yeah, we said 1972, so I guess 5 years before he dies. And
oh,
I mean,
really?
Yeah.
How old is he at the time of this thing?
Good question. He was born in 1909. Shit, I had it up earlier. Hold on.
Sure.
Okay, Google.
Ooh.
What year was Groucho Marx born? That's just the easiest way to do it. I can't type that fast on my phone.
Wow.
What's she going to tell me?
Let me guess. Can I?
La 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 la.
Too late. But did I hear an 18?
1890. I was totally wrong. I was 19 years off.
That's crazy that he was born in the 1800s.
Died at 87. That's not bad. Like, he did okay.
So he's 82 at the time of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, like, he sings a lot on it. And
right.
His voice sounds not in peak form, to say
right.
the least.
Right. Lydia. But don't get me wrong. I love him. He's still great. But it is just like, okay. All right.
I think it definitely changed my... I'll say this thing first, and then I'll tell a story that I think. So
it
changed my opinion of him. I think until I listened to this, I was like, Groucho is an adorable scamp, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
Like, he lives in a bizarre, absurd world all the time where he's running around with his brothers.
Right.
I listened to this. I learned that, you know, Chico was like an inveterate tail chaser. That's the thing that I did. I just didn't know anything about him beyond my, like... childhood perception of him as like a funny man with a silly
mustache
and glasses and the nose. I went to a summer camp for like 10 years growing up, and like all the way, started at 8, went till I was 17.
Crazy.
And I had a counselor who I would have, like, I had him a few years in a row, and I remember he would always be like so tired, and I would be like, why are you guys always so exhausted? And he was like, we stay up late, like, planning programs for you guys, like, and then we have to wake up early. So then I did, like, a CIT year, kind of, and I had a girlfriend that summer, and we were, like, walking off somewhere on camp to, like, make out one night, and it was pretty late. And my counselor was back at camp for some reason, even though it was many years later, and he was going off somewhere with, like, a woman to make out, and we saw each other, and it was as if he remembered that specific conversation, and he just locks eyes with me, and he goes, now you know why we were always so tired all the time. And I was like, oh, wait, that's
holy
different.
Shit.
And that's a little bit what this Groucho is like. There's a weird joke early on. Am I talking too much?
No, just, are you kidding? So no, you've got a lot. You've got thoughts. That's good.
What about the joke where Groucho's like... the stories were difficult to track from a 2015 sensibility.
Sure.
Like, the pacing. And I would try to anticipate what was going to happen and when it was over, and I would often be wrong. But so the story is, like, Chico used to pawn things, and then one day he comes home with a lot of toilet paper for the first time.
Yes.
And so then he goes, before that, we would use, and then he names one newspaper, and the crowd cracks up. I don't get the joke.
Right.
Then he names another newspaper, and the crowd really laughs.
I know.
That's an escalation of some kind.
Uh-huh.
And then he goes, and before we had newspapers, we would just roll it up into little balls and smoke it. And I don't think he means paper. I think he means the Marx family's feces. They would make it into smokable form. And then he's like, it had a nice flavor to it. And the crowd sort of laughs like, what?
I know.
I listened to it again to make sure that I was understanding it. I think I did.
No, I think you're absolutely right. There's a lot of, like, that and obviously a ton of anachronistic, like, vaudeville songs that I've never heard in my life. A couple of them that aren't that great. And it's stuff that just really throws you off, where he's like, you know, this is the stuff I want to either get off my chest or shit that I've never told before. I'm 82. I don't give a fuck. I'm not entirely sure what was on his mind at the time. I mean, he's like, well, fuck, I got to do an hour and a half of material. What do I have that I can't do with, that I don't have my brothers for?
Right.
You know, because the only one left is Zeppo, and he's not that funny.
Right.
I assume he was still around. Maybe Gummo. No, I think Gummo was the older one. He was probably dead by then, too.
Oh. I don't know that stuff. Are all the other ones dead? Chico's dead? Harpo's dead?
At that point, Chico and Harpo are dead, because I think he does a little dedication to them right closer to the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And then my assumption then is that Zeppo is at least still alive, but I think Gummo was the oldest, and he was never in any of the movies, and I think he might have been dead for years. Nobody knew who he was or cared.
Yeah, ambiently around. The Marx Brothers are like the Wu-Tang Clan of vaudeville. I also found that I would... you know, the narrative that I formed of what I was listening to once I sort of got my bearings was, I'm listening to a doddering old man who's being tolerated. But then that was an underestimation because he would get lyrics wrong and, like, berate the piano player who's Marvin Hamlisch. And I would be like, oh, he's still, I mean, you can't count him off. Like,
I know.
Count him out. He's got his showbiz chops.
Oh,
I mean, he's
100%.
Been in the game for for how long?
Yeah.
60 years?
Since he was
70 years?
Probably since he was 7 or 8. Like, he was very young when he started, so.
Yeah, so I also then, you know, sort of like, okay, you know, he's still the, he's still like a king of entertainment.
But, but he's been rediscovered too. I'm sorry to interrupt,
no,
but like
please,
this is like
context.
This is during a period of him being rediscovered, which is something you don't really read about that often. And I only know from friends of friends or like friends who grew up. Like I have a friend named Elizabeth who grew up in Hollywood, like with parents who knew famous people, like tons of famous people. Mm-hmm. And she's got a story about going to see something at a theater and fucking Groucho sitting right next to her for the whole show.
No way.
Yeah, and she cared because she grew up nerding out about certain comedy things, but like. They were getting, this was at a time of a resurgence for them because people didn't know about their shit. And then in the 70s, all of a sudden, college kids were rediscovering them. I can't remember what the impetus for that was, but this is a perfect timing for him. He's like, somebody was like, let's take advantage of this.
First, I would like to take a bow for Harpo and Chico. Hello, I must be going. I cannot stay, I came to say I must be going. I'm glad I came, but just the same, I must be going.
For my sake, you must stay, for if you go away, you'll spoil this party I am brewing.
I'll stay a week or two. I'll stay the summer through, but I am telling you, I must be going.
But at this point, yeah, this is right at the time when people were rediscovering how important Groucho was. They just knew him for, like, Let's Make a Deal. That fucking show with the duck. My brain is just...
with the duck.
Yes. The secret word. What's it called? No. Now you said the secret word. Because he does a secret word
joke.
Oh,
yeah. He does do a
my
secret word
joke. You Bet Your Life. Is that the name of it?
I think it is.
My brain's just fucking off right now. But that's... Either way, that's what they knew him from. They're like, oh, he's this old guy. And then people rediscover his movies. They're like, oh, he was one of the most brilliant satirists of all time.
Right.
You know?
And hip.
And completely hip. Like, he's doing all this anti-war shit during this, which I think is fantastic. It's subtle, but it's like it's getting applause.
Yep. And he does some... There's some good anti-priest material that I... that I cut into.
Uh-huh.
That was great. So I thought that stuff was really good, and I think his strongest thing was just, I was like, yes, let's roll out the anecdotes from, you know, hanging out with the A-level of that time of Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Like, those are really good. He has anecdote after anecdote about rubbing elbows with all these interesting people.
Yeah.
Like, he's got a good Greta Garbo in the elevator story.
So good.
And a T.S. Eliot story.
Yes.
When he brought that out, I was like, geez.
If you look, that's one thing that you didn't have the advantage of having is actually having the LP. If you open it up, because obviously it's a gatefold, so if you open it up, there's a little thing. I was wondering if there was an insert, and I'd never looked, but there's this whole thing with all these quotes. There are a couple that are bullshit quotes, but like the one from T.S. Eliot's fantastic. There's one from the Smothers Brothers, referred to as the Brothers Smothers on the inside, which I think is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of really great quotes, and that's the one of those things that you sort of forget. That's him standing with Charlie Chaplin on the left, for fuck's sake.
Wow.
Like, it's just so... Yeah, you kind of forget the
there's a quote from Candace Bergen who says, "If only I were 40 years older." That's great.
Fucking love her.
He's so hip looking.
Yeah.
His glasses look exactly like mine.
Mm-hmm.
He has on a cool black beret.
Yep. He was rocking that one.
Is this
for
what
a while.
He looked like when he did this thing?
I think so. And also that back photo is awesome.
It is awesome.
It's so he's doing a sexy starlet pose.
Yeah, it's sort of Burt Reynolds.
100%. That's what I thought first.
Leopard print rug.
Except for everybody, he is clothed. Just so everyone.
Yes, he
knows.
Is. And his pants are
fucking
so high.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I'm sure half of that was actually the style, and then the other half was no, this is funny.
Yep.
Way past his navel, I'm sure.
Oh, wow. Yeah, really interesting. I am glad that I didn't have this stuff because I like just experiencing it really purely.
Yeah.
There's a joke a couple times. I think there were some gags that you needed to be physically in the room to understand.
Uh-huh.
At one point, he was like, I had an uncle, Julius. He was more than 4 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
And the crowd laughs real hard. What is that?
I think the gag is... I think the gag is you wouldn't ever say greater than blah 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 unless they were super tall, but like the idea that he was just
over
slightly
7 feet
four,
tall.
Yeah,
that you would.
I think that's
on.
Just it, just the wording. Huh. That's the wording of it. I think it's just a language joke. That's all.
Okay,
it sounds like an old vaudeville joke to me. Like
yes.
It sounds like one that they would use. You know, you might use as crowd work, even. You know,
right? Which he pronounces with three syllables, vaudeville.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another wonderful, like, just remnant of his days then.
Yeah.
He tells a story on here that I remember I'd forgotten because, again, I hadn't listened to this in probably 10 years. Like, how he decided he wanted to get into show business. Where he goes to this guy's house. He knew he was in show business, and basically he's wearing lipstick, and that's a business I knew I wanted to be a part of. I fucking love that. Like, it's very weird because it's like, so are you saying that you're into cross-dress? Which is fine, but it's like, it's very weird to say, like, maybe it's just like, I want to dress up. Like, I want to, you know? I thought that was kind of cute. Like, it's very innocent.
I know it is. And also, I just sort of like... It fits into his character as, like, I'm just this guy who's observing life and enjoying the weirdness of it.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought it played into that. What about, there was a callback. He goes, we called him Gummo because he had gumshoes. My uncle brought him a pair of rubbers. In a nice way, I mean.
Right.
And the crowd takes a second and then they laugh because they're like, oh, yeah. He's like, yeah. And then later on he's like, after school, he knew my father was laying for him. In a nice way, I mean.
Yeah, right. I'm like... Whoa.
And then there's the story about how Hedy Lamarr's, how Victor Mature's knockers are better than Hedy Lamarr's. That's the kind of stuff where it feels like my camp counselor. Like, I'm like, oh, he was just like a dirty old Jewish guy. Like, I know, you know, like my grandfather's poker friends used
right,
to be
right.
Before they died.
Uh-huh. And it is that weird mix of that stuff. And possibly smoking feces, and obviously, like, this really adorable shit, like, that comes from growing up, I'm sure they grew up poor in, you know, New York.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in those days, like, the kind of shit where you had to look at it through these rose-colored glasses or you were fucked.
Yes, and, he sings a song, and he sings in German and in Yiddish.
Yes, yeah.
Which is really cool to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part where he's like, I don't even... See, that's the thing. The whole thing was, I didn't seek out any context for it.
Mm-hmm.
If he hadn't said that it was at Carnegie Hall, I wouldn't have known that it was there.
Yeah.
And in the same way, I didn't bother looking up any of the references within the act that I didn't get. Because I was like, I'm just going to take this in purely. But he says, I was a German comedian... he's like, I went out as a German comedian and they had just sunk the Lusitania, so I couldn't do that.
Uh-huh.
He's like, so I went out as a Jew comedian and I sang this song. And I did. Do you know what he means there? Like, he sort of, you know, tweaks his act?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I guess just to put a name on all this, I just was left with 1,000 questions after I listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
I understood much more about Groucho and much less about the world of it because I thought it was going to be... The stand-up act he developed at some point in his showbiz career.
Right. Do you like knowing that much more about him? Does it help you?
I mean, it's a more complete picture. It's kind of a relief to know that it's cool to hear him be in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's also kind of unfathomable that for a long time our world just included Groucho Marx moving through it. He's so iconic that to hear him talk about going out to... That he says some priests knock into him at one point and knock his cigar out of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
Just that you... He's like he's a non-living legend, so the fact that he was just around is... I had never really thought about that before.
Yeah. I think I was just talking about with Jackie Cation about this. Like, do you know... Have you ever seen Harold and Maude?
No.
Okay. The lead in Harold and Maude is named Bud Cort. He didn't do much after that until... Wes Anderson decided to rediscover him because why not, and put him in his movies. He for a while
Who is he in Wes Anderson's movies?
He's like balding bearded guy. He's not like notoriously. He was a super adorable, handsome little kid, like 18 or so in Harold and Maude, and then got in a car accident, kind of Mark Hamill style, and got all fucked up.
Oh really?
Didn't have appeal anymore.
Whoa.
Yes.
Did that happen to Mark Hamill?
Yeah. Right before, between Empire and Jedi, he got into a huge car accident, which is why at the beginning of, or am I doing the other way around? Is it the beginning of Jedi or the beginning of Empire where it happens? At beginning of Empire, sorry. So it's between Star Wars and Empire. In the beginning of Empire, he's in that water tank, gets hit by the Wampa.
Oh, yeah.
His face is totally changed because of all the plastic surgery.
Whoa.
Yeah. So people don't always realize that. It's easier to see it now when he's older. But he had a lot of plastic surgery. And that people were worried he wouldn't have a career after that. He just didn't have a career after that because they probably just wanted him to keep recreating Star Wars.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing I'm sure happened with Bud Cort. But Bud Cort was a big fan of Groucho. And it's one of these things that just blows my mind because, like, I do this podcast, I get to meet, like, my heroes an awful lot. He got to not only meet Groucho, he lived with him for a period. I'm not sure the whole context of it. I've been trying to get Bud Cort on the show to talk about this album in particular.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's never happened. So I was glad somebody... This is the first time somebody's picked the Marx Brothers for the show.
Really?
Yes.
Do you?
After 4.5 years.
Wow, wow. Congratulations, by
You're
the way.
Right. That's thank a long you. Run. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Do you? Will you repeat albums? Like, do you talk about albums
one month? Because people picked it, we did Free to Be You and Me 3 times because... 3 people picked it month. So yeah, I always redo them. Like my buddy Jeremy was going to come over, but he couldn't make it. Like, because he's got a story where his dad met Groucho and like all this.
Oh,
so
wow.
He has a bunch of great stories too, and probably has a great story about how his dad introduced him to the Marx Brothers. So that's what I want to ask you: is when did you first discover the Marx Brothers?
I don't remember not knowing the Marx Brothers.
Okay, that's good. That's a good sign.
I remember watching Duck Soup when I was at the oldest 7,
mm-hmm.
and just Harpo is your guy when you're that age.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, the rest of it was, there's no way I was getting the rapid fire wordplay,
right,
but
right.
Just, there's a set piece where he's pouring lemonade in someone's, the lemonade. I don't think I've seen it as an adult, but it's like indelibly burned into my brain.
Mm-hmm.
He's like pouring lemonade into someone's pants or something.
Yeah, I'm sure that's that happens in it.
I'm sure people who know the scene are like, "No, dummy!" Come on, screaming at their iPhone. But yeah, so that was great. And then they are cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think my uncle loves the Three Stooges, and I used to watch those with him and. Because I, you know, like, looked up to him, I would, like, laugh. But I don't think that they're... Now I think they're funny, and I don't think they're cool.
Right.
But the Marx Brothers are cool. Super cool in, like, a hipster way.
100%.
Like, they're... Not hipster. They're very hip.
Yeah.
Their clothes are cool.
Mm-hmm.
When they aren't cool, you can tell it's very deliberate.
Right.
But, like,
right.
Chico looks really cool.
For sure.
And Harpo has dope clothes, and Groucho's a self-aware caricature of a not... Of a square.
Yeah.
A square-icature. So, but what I really liked the last time I watched one of their movies, it's like a safe choice for our family.
Mm-hmm.
The Venn diagram overlap for everybody includes the Marx Brothers.
Yeah.
And so now I really like, my favorite parts are the musical numbers and especially watching Chico play piano.
Oh my God, I know.
I don't know of a more entertaining, it's like comedy piano playing.
Right. But also pretty damn good playing,
and
you know?
Super entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, It's like eating Oreos or something. You're
mm-hmm.
like, this is not like a profound, beautiful, moving musical experience.
Sure. It's not the harp.
Damn, does
played.
It deliver the goods.
And
there's like
a
million things to love about it.
Exactly right. And you look in his eyes and I'm like, oh, I get it. I get why all those women slept with him. He charmed the fuck out of these women.
Do you know, can you tell me stories about him being
One story
yeah.
that I've heard. And I cannot remember where I originally heard it. It could be apocryphal. Who knows? But there was, oh God, what's her name? Now it's Tallulah Bankhead.
Oh.
She was, I know her more from her work in the 50s when she was already aging, like on Lucy and stuff. Beautiful woman in the 30s and 40s. The story goes that Chico Marx was on set with her somewhere or near her, came up to her, said, "Madam, I would do just about anything to fuck you." And she said, "And so you shall." And that's all he had to say. That is how the story apparently happened.
Wow.
Yeah, she was this gorgeous bombshell of a woman, and that's all he had to do because he was that fucking suave.
Wow.
Yeah. Also had a huge gambling problem.
Yeah.
Massive gambling problem.
Yeah.
I think he mentions that in this a little bit, maybe. He was a gambler.
Yeah,
that's all
he
says, but no, massive problem.
He does say that he was a gambler.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been around the poop story, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Smoking the poop.
You're right. I think it was one of the things that just sort of set him up as this kind of
there's,
guy.
Just to tie it all together, there's a Wu-Tang Clan lyric where Method Man says, "Roll that shit, light that shit, smoke it." Which, in this case, all too literal.
You can see the actors. And she starts eating the sauerkraut candy. And I can hear her, and I can't hear the actors on the stage. And I could have killed her. I thought she'd offer me a piece. But she didn't. So when the show was over, by this time she consumed all the candy. And we got outside, and I said, Annie, it was cold. It was real cold. It had been snowing all that day. You had sauerkraut candy, didn't you? Yeah. You never offered me a piece of the candy, did you? Now, I only have 5 cents left, and we got to go all the way to 93rd Street. Now, look, I care a great deal about you, but I don't want to walk to 93rd Street. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll toss a coin up, this nickel that I had left, and you holler heads or tails. She hollered heads and came down tails, and she walked home. I didn't see her again for 10 years.
So somebody told me a story. I said Chico when I was talking about him.
Mm-hmm.
I told someone I was listening to this record.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and then he tells, I'm sure I was telling the Smoke the Poop story, and I said, Chico, apparently, and he cuts me off and goes, did Groucho pronounce it Chico or Chico? And I said, Chico, I'm just used to saying it Chico,
yep,
so
right.
That's why I said it that way. And I was like, but I learned that he was called that because he was a chicken chaser,
mm-hmm.
says Groucho on the
mm-hmm.
record. And the person I was talking to goes, yeah, do you know that scene in whatever it is, maybe it's A Night at the Opera, and they come down a staircase and it's just like, there's dancing girls like
uh-huh.
all up and down the staircase.
Oh no.
He's like, the story is that he made it a point to have sex with every one of those women in the course of the production.
Of course he did.
So that's that's the Chico sex story.
Yeah.
It sounds like he had some, maybe, I don't know if it was a full-fledged addiction, but it sounds like maybe if he had a gambling addiction, I would not be surprised to hear.
They were fucking rock stars, and it's weird to realize. I mean, they did, I wrote it down. How many did they do? 13 features. I did not realize that they did 13 features, because I'm more familiar with the ones that I've got. So I got Animal Crackers, Duck Soup, and Monkey Business. I'm sure
Monkey
I might
business.
Have other ones somewhere, but like Duck Soup is probably my favorite of them. But like,
right.
those are the ones I'm more familiar with. And they did some latter day ones that people don't care about.
Yeah.
There's some old footage that also exists of a pilot that Chico and Harpo tried to make together when they were desperate for money.
You're
because
kidding.
Of gambling. Yeah. Never came together because it was just the two of them. Like,
yeah, you need that third guy.
You really do. And Groucho was busy off doing, you know, You Bet Your Life, and he's like, I don't need that shit,
huh.
you know. So, yeah.
Did they have beef? Did they stay close to the end? Or was
they did, to the best of my knowledge, they were still very
okay.
close. Yeah. It was just more of a Groucho didn't need it, they did kind of thing.
He was the guy.
Mm-hmm. So weird.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Was Harpo like a dark guy? What's his story?
I need to know more about him. There are a few things, and a couple things I'm going to tell you. You can take with a grain of salt because
yeah.
I don't know the full details.
Okay.
But Harpo was, to some degree, a spy during World War II. I don't know
what?
The extent to which, but yes, he was a spy during World War II.
You're kidding.
In the same way that Julia Child was. She was also a spy.
What?
Yes.
I feel like I'm inhabiting an alternate reality
right
now. I
know, isn't it? It's fucking... I don't know the details, and I've been wanting to find out forever. I want to actually get one of Harpo's kids on the show because... His kids are all still around, to the best of my knowledge.
Really?
Yeah. And his
Los
biggest,
Angeles.
The most dark thing people ever talk about is like how he and his wife had trouble conceiving for a long time, so they adopted most of their kids, and he loved kids. That was his big thing. Chico's was just the gambling and the fucking, and to the end, from
right.
what I understand.
He was like the dark brother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And nobody knows anything about Zeppo because nobody cares, and then Gummo, again, was the oldest one who died. And Gummo, was it Zeppo that became their manager? I'm sorry, nerds. I know there are a lot of nerds out there who I love the Groucho, I love the Marx Brothers, but like there are people out there who again are screaming right now that like you don't know who was their manager.
There's too many
no,
things to be a nerd about.
Yeah.
It's just you have to pick your domains.
Well, exactly
your,
right.
Your realms of expertise.
And it's becoming more spread out the more comedy albums I have to talk about. Like I have to become a mini expert for 5 minutes about some shit. And it's like I lose it, knowledge I used to have about these guys who I love.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Sure.
It's hard.
You have to be a jack of all trades.
100%. You know, you brought up the Three Stooges thing. I was thinking, because you're coming on the show, I'm like, not totally surprised because I think it's happening again where people don't know who the Marx Brothers are, but the Three Stooges keep surviving for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Because it's lowest common denominator, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't want to insult people. I enjoy them okay, and I've recently rediscovered some stuff of theirs that I really actually like.
Uh-huh.
I don't care about the hitting. But I'm surprised it hasn't been an epic rap battle to a degree. I would...
Oh.
You know what I mean? The Marx Brothers versus the Three Stooges would be fucking fantastic. I feel like it should happen. Just so...
That is an interesting idea.
You know. But I don't know that anybody would get the references. You know, that's another... This is the problem.
It'd be tough, especially, I think, on the Stooge end. Mm-hmm. Because those guys are not individuated enough.
No.
I grew up with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't mean within their act. I mean in the popular imagination.
Yeah.
Like, I think everybody... Or do I just think this because I know it?
Mm-hmm.
But I think the distinctions between Groucho, Chico, and Harpo are much clearer in the mind of your average American than between Moe, Lenny, and Curly.
Yeah, I know. And Moe, it's just Moe, this is the boss, and the other two are not, and they're dumb. Like, it's mostly, you know?
Yes.
It's not a lot, for sure. No, I
Larry,
agree.
I said Lenny.
Oh, right.
See? I mean,
even and then if you want to get real deep into it, the guys you drop in later are the Ritz Brothers, but nobody's ever heard of the Ritz Brothers.
I have never heard of them.
Yeah, nobody
has. They're like a Latter-day
They were pre or about the same time as the Marx Brothers, and I don't know any of their material. Jeff Abraham is listening right now and also screaming it. Jeff Abraham is a frequent guest on the show.
Hey, Jeff.
Who loves the Ritz Brothers, and he's got a lot of collectibles from their okay. A lot of people love them. Mel Brooks knew the Ritz Brothers as well as he did the Marx Brothers. So they were an influence. They just did not have the staying power that the Marx Brothers had.
Hmm.
And the Marx Brothers have this weird thing where I feel like they're going to fluctuate in popularity and interest, where hitting people always works.
Yeah.
Even though, like, Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe is a pretty good joke, and that was Three Stooges. Every once in a while, they'd have a really good
language joke. That was the Three Stooges?
Joke, pretty sure. First time I ever saw it,
was
that.
Off?
Huh?
The Car Talk guys ripped that off?
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Oh, no, that's not them.
I don't know. There's somebody else that you...
I think it is. Isn't that the Car Talk guys?
Did they do something like that? They could have.
They have pun-named attorneys. I'm
going
to look that
up. You should
Can
look
you cover
up.
For me?
My, oh, absolutely. My favorite, my favorite variation on that joke, which is a joke on that joke. Actually, they did it. We were watching 30 Rock last night, and they also did it. But I want to say it was The Simpsons did Dewey, Cheatham, Howe, and Lowenstein, which is one of my favorite, because they just ruined the Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe joke by making a dumb joke about the lawyer being Jewish. Like, it's just so stupid. It's the dumbest joke. But then they did something like that on 30 Rock, which was not as good as the Simpsons joke, but pretty solid. Wait, so now you're originally from Massachusetts, is
just
that right?
Just to confirm, Car Talk does do Dewey
Cheatham and Howe. Okay, so they also... All right, see, that's good. So that we know that Click and Clack enjoy the Three Stooges.
Yep.
But now, speaking of Car Talk, you are from Massachusetts, am I mistaken?
I was born in Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Grew up in Cleveland. My mom's a rabbi, so then we went and lived... My mom decided to go to rabbinical school when I was six.
Okay.
So we went and lived in Israel for a year when I was seven,
wow.
Where you do your first year of seminary. Then she moved to we moved to Cincinnati so she could do the rest of her. There's three Reform rabbi schools in the United States, one in LA, one in New York, and one in Cincinnati, of all places.
Interesting.
And so we moved there.
Interesting.
So Ohio till I was 12, and then she got a job and then subsequently had her career in Springfield, Missouri.
Okay.
And, like, you know, was the rabbi of a congregation there. I went to Brandeis in Boston.
Okay.
And so I got to Boston when I was 18. But then I lived there until I moved out to LA 12 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us to now.
All right. So that makes it so. Yeah. I'm just saying. Not everybody knows who the Click and the Clack are. I call them the Click and the Clack.
Oh, I thought that was a segue into my backstory. You were literally just trying to figure out the Click and Clack connection.
No, well, I know. I know who they are. And I was trying to segue. It was a shitty segue. I'm fully aware. And I'm like, and I think the only reason I knew the Massachusetts thing is because your number popped up on my screen. And I'm like, oh, let's see if that's where he's actually from.
Yeah.
Fucking winged it and kind of ish.
No, it all tied together again.
So, okay, so you do have, maybe it's, I've never spoken to anybody on the show who raps. Sorry, Jason Picard, who has been on the show, also raps.
Okay.
But, like, doing rap and doing comedy, mixing the two, was it a natural connection for you? Because I know there's plenty of rap that actually, that's funny, but I'm just curious where it comes
together. I'll rein this in. I've been writing rap since I was about 10.
Okay.
I got Naughty by Nature's first album and Heavy D's album, Peaceful Journey.
Mm-hmm.
And those set it off. And so I was listening to those, immediately started writing my own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was I stumbled on it. I stumbled onto it at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just was something I was going to be disposed towards no matter what. But
sure.
Hitting it at that peak age, you know, you're just so wide open.
Mm-hmm.
If I started taking a musical instrument then, I'm sure I'd be great at music.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
B- Because I'm so great at rap. but you know what I mean. I would be much more steeped in that. So anyways, yeah. So I've been writing that for a long time, but I was always, for a while I would write very thugged out, profane, you know, misogynistic, crime-obsessed kind of stuff, like the things that I was listening to.
Mm-hmm. Did it in any way reflect your growing up? Or where you grew
not.
Up? Okay,
I had a very sweet, like, nice legit, Jewish boy kind of very sheltered upbringing.
Okay.
No crime.
I mean, you knew who the Marx Brothers were.
I knew who the Marx Brothers were. That's what I thought was, like, the epitome of, you know, as good as life got.
Sure.
So, yeah. And so then I kept writing raps on and off. As I think as I got more aware of, as I started being like, oh, this really isn't who I am as a person, it became less interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So then I have raps from my late teens that I wrote where it's much more, I use as the default setting just talking about what a great rapper I am,
uh-huh,
because that's a safe move in hip-hop much of the time. And mm-hmm, so it also gives you a chance to, it's like a platform from which to show what you can do.
For sure.
And I didn't have to say, to like lie about my reality and say that I was killing people or threaten people with guns and stuff like that. You can just say I'm a great rapper. And then the listener can agree or disagree.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did that. So then by the time I got to college, that had phased out because it just was exhausting and not juicy, you know, not rewarding to write that kind of thing. And then I started a sketch group with some friends. They asked me to join. And then we started. So then that was the first time I'd written comedy in any. I always liked being the center of attention, but that was the first time that comedy had been a thing that I did.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually was paving the way because we were writing sketches that were 1.5 to 3.5 minutes long,
sure,
which is about the length of a song.
Yep.
And they would have a beginning, middle, and end, and they'd escalate, and there'd be a button on the end that, mm-hmm, would be your door out of there. And that's exactly the same skill set that I use nowadays when I'm writing rap songs.
I bet, yeah.
So at one show or other with my group, which we took with us for a few years after college, we didn't have enough material ready for the time we were expected to fill, and I said, okay, I wrote this rap about getting pulled over by a cop for running a red light, but on my bike, and they were like, I mean, what the hell, we gotta do something.
Yeah.
And it went really well.
Awesome.
And so then from then on, there was always a spot in the show for me to do one song.
Yeah.
And I would test out my early, you know, I was starting to find the sweet spot of combining the rap I wanted to do with the comedy that seemed like the most comfortable way for me to express myself.
Sure.
Where my voice worked best, if you will.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of how that got started.
Years ago, there were many songs written about mothers. You know, like Mammy and Island Must Be Heaven. Mom, They're Making Eyes at Me. My Mother's Eyes. But nobody ever wrote any song about fathers. Father was the town schlemiel in almost every place. He was nothing. Mother was the boss. I think there were two songs that I remember. Pop Goes the Weasel. And Oh What a Crumb Is My Old Man. I remember one more song. It was called Everybody Works But Father. He sits around all day, feet in front of the fireplace, smoking his pipe of clay. Mother takes in washing, so does Sister Ann. Everybody works in our house, but my old man. That was a big hit, that song. They even sang it in Europe, in Germany. Alle Schaft haben ich Vater, der geht den ganzen Tag herum. In Rauch die verdammte Pfeife, das alles geht drüben drum. Und Mutter nimmt den Washing, und auch du Schwester an. Alle arbeiten in unser Platz, aber nicht der alte Mann.
Is there like the same sort of comfort zone? Like you don't have to worry. Do you have to worry about feeling legitimate because you're doing comedy? Because I feel like some people freak out because I'm not doing something quote unquote serious, mm-hmm, that this isn't legit. But I mean, just because rap hasn't always been comedic, although in the beginning it kind of was a little bit.
Yeah. Well, so I've gotten, it's taken a long time to get comfortable with doing raps on stage,
mm-hmm,
and it's, I mean, I'm still not all the way, you know, I'm still trying to figure out exactly what I think about it, and I think as I change, my relationship to it changes, but there was that, you know, there's that bad thing of, like, white guys being like, yo, I'm a G from the hood, but my hood is a super rich, you know, there's like a super rich, like
Jamie Kennedy shit.
I mean,
it's okay. I can say it.
You know, and the like, yeah, there's just the bad kind of comedy rap.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
I think just,
Jamie Kennedy. Sorry, just to say it twice. he didn't buy either of the scripts that I wrote for him, so I'm allowed to shit on him.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. You've got a legitimate gripe.
100%.
I just have always, I don't know, man. You know, it's just, I love to do, it's a very fun form in which, you know, I have a lot of fun doing it, and I think it, like, lets me show off a talent, so it's fun for me to do.
Yeah.
And, I'm trying to lock onto the exact question. In terms of comedy being part of hip-hop, I think now it is as much or more as it ever has been. I mean, there was definitely funny stories like the, you know, the quote-unquote first rap song, Rapper's Delight.
Right.
There's like a million, quote-unquote, because it wasn't, of course.
For 100%, yeah.
As you know. But there's a lot of funny moments in that. You know, there's Big Bank Hank's story about being Superman and, you know, out Supermaning Superman to seduce Lois Lane. And then there's the weird, surrealistic, you go over to your friend's house and his mom makes chicken that tastes like wood and you pretend to eat. Anyway, so there's, like, that's funny comedic stuff.
Yeah.
And definitely that sense of humor stays all the way through. And even now, like, I mean, you know, I think Lil Wayne is like a clown. I mean, just his, it's just like he's constantly doing funny, ridiculous things, and especially like in his heyday when everybody was sort of like, who, what, wait, what's happening with Lil Wayne? This is insane.
Yeah.
And even I was talking to someone, one of my favorite rappers, like I would put him in my top five, is Doom, MF Doom. I don't know if you know his stuff.
I know the name, but I couldn't tell you for a second.
I read an interview with him where he said, I treat my lyrics like, as he called it, comedy stand-up. He's like, I try never to let, you know, too long go by before there's a joke, something to laugh at. And so he does this thing, he'll do these things where I'll give two sample lyrics. He goes, the beat won't fail me with more rhymes than times. And then he refers to himself in the third person. So he goes, the beat won't fail me with more rhymes than times he washes hands and feet daily. And then pause and he goes, and all that kerosene ain't cheap. And then it goes on to the next lyric. So, oh, I didn't even assume he was washing his hands and feet with kerosene, but why is he doing that? That's a funny twist.
Yeah.
And then he has another lyric where he makes the exact same move, referring to himself again. He goes, he don't know his own strength. When he's on the bone, it's like the microphone's length. And then there's a pause, and he goes, and width. And it's just like a funny way to do a dick boast.
Yeah.
I think he's like the most literal correlation between rapper and stand-up comedian who's like, quote-unquote, a legit rapper.
Sure.
But even more than that, now hip-hop is all about, you know, it sort of, I think, grew out of like the hashtag, the so-called hashtag rap that Drake and Nicki Minaj and Wayne were doing. You're familiar with this?
A little bit.
Like where they would go, you know, Nicki would say, like, all my people get Buck Wild, and then she goes, overbite. So instead of saying, like an overbite, it would just be like, hashtag.
Wow, all right.
So that kind of thing. Okay. So, but nowadays, I think rap is, there's so much punning and wordplay, especially with those guys, I think. Like, you know, those guys really do a lot of it. Nicki Minaj does a lot of it. But so I think that feels real comedy-ish.
Yeah.
Double meanings.
I can see that.
And that kind of thing. So.
And it's condensed. Yeah. It's really tight in the same way. I mean, like, you know, just to hop back to Groucho, I mean, even with his super slow delivery on this record, he's still got a couple of, like, old bits that are like, yeah, those are good standards to have.
Yeah, definitely. You
know? And I love wordplay. I mean, that's, like, I'm a person who's not ashamed to laugh at or make a pun.
No. I definitely am in that camp as well, and I think that people who groan in dismay when a pun happens are I bet they don't do that for every pun they hear. It's just when it's presented in that form.
Yep.
And B, meaning like if you see it in like an ad or a hip hop song, you're probably much more tolerant of punning. So I don't think it's fair to write it off wholesale. And also I think you're not giving it a fair shake. Like I hate terrible puns too, but I think great puns are reveal truths and make connections in a way that's entertaining but also can like shed light on an idea or 100%. A set of ideas.
100%. So all right. So normally, like when we're doing the show, I'm always like, well, you listened to this as a kid, but you obviously didn't. Did you ever? I mean, was there a period of your life when you just sort of moved past the Marx Brothers and were just like, there's nothing new to discover? Or did you rediscover them at any point? Because sometimes that happens. Like, I had that with Weird Al, where I, like, there's a very short, unfortunate period where I wasn't listening to Weird Al for a bit. And I don't like that person that I was. Like, rediscovering Weird Al was a really good thing for me.
Sure. Well, you maybe needed to go away from it and grow a little bit.
A little bit.
Restock the pond.
A little bit.
And then come back to Weird Al as an adult. I think I've never gone deep on the Marx Bros, which is part of why I wanted to listen to pick this particular album. Mm-hmm. I wanted a new perspective with my, again, adult sensibilities, being what they are, the most adult sensibilities I've ever had. But I think I've always ambiently been like, oh yeah, the Marxes are great. And just reading Groucho's greatest quotes, their jokes are insane.
Mm-hmm.
I think time flies like an arrow, fruit flies like a banana must be one of the best word jokes ever.
Yeah, yeah. It's fucking gorgeous.
It fills me with joy and also the feeling of like, oh, I see what you did there, and you can work through the thought process, and it's just, if that appeals to you, then that is profoundly appealing.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Joke. Yeah. I never like was really into them and then went away because I thought they were uncool as a teenager and then got back into them again. I just, every time I watch them, I'm like, these guys were great.
Yeah.
And every time I watch their movies, I think something new about it. The last time I saw one, was probably within the last, I would say like 3 to 4 years, something like that. I haven't watched anything real recently, but I was struck by how slow and loose the pace of the movie was.
Uh-huh.
It just is so, editing was so different, and the pace that it seems like audiences were used to and wanted. It's just really interesting to watch them, and their live stage skills are so evident.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And that was the other thing too about them is like, even up until close to the end of the, up until at least the 40s, when they were still doing some new, fresh stuff, they were going out on the road and testing this shit out like you do a stand-up show. You know? And, like, just to tweak it, like, that joke didn't work, and, like, then tweaking it and turning it into a fucking solid movie, usually.
Yeah.
With weird musical interludes, which are fine if you really like the musical interludes, which I tend to.
I do, too. You mean the songs or the interludes?
Yes.
Like, instrumental?
Both. The instrumental stuff. Like, when we're cutting to Harpo or Chico, like, there's so much skill that you can't not watch them.
Yeah.
As a kid, it used to slow it down more for me more than it did does now. And I think it's mostly because my mom was like, this part's boring. You're not going to like this part. That's kind of where a lot of it would come from.
Self-fulfilling.
I mean, I'm lucky that my mom introduced me to the fucking Marx Brothers. Don't get me wrong. That's a good thing. But yeah, it's more fun. Just like, first of all, that Harpo's a genius on that fucking thing. And then, like you said, watching Chico just like doing the gun thing with his finger.
She's so fucking,
so good. So solid.
I saw Benny Goodman on an episode of Sid Caesar's show playing with a big band, and I was like, this is awesome.
Uh-huh.
And I used to not like the musical stuff, too, when I was a kid on the Marx Brothers movies, but I think audiences demanded it, right? It was like,
I would imagine,
obligatory to have a couple big, lavish musical numbers.
Mm-hmm. But now I honestly am bored if they do it on a new show. Old stuff I can put I don't know why. That's one of the things I don't like about SNL. I don't care to watch them. But I'm not, honestly, like, not remotely up to date on music at all. Weird Al is the one thing that keeps me up to date on music.
Yeah.
I have to do research because I'm like, oh, this 50-plus-year-old is way hipper than I am. Fuck. Okay, cool.
It's like getting your news through Jon Stewart.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, very much
getting
the same thing.
Getting your pop music through Weird Al.
Yeah.
I was going to say...
I'm the worst. I interrupted you. I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. It's a good organic conversation. The I feel like the first comedy album that I really got into was Adam Sandler's They're All Gonna Laugh at You.
Mm-hmm. It's come up a few times on the show.
Mm-hmm. Really, really, really formative.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there's a certain... When I see Jewish people being entertaining, I would have to think about it more before I did anything so formal as, like, get it on the record on your podcast. So I can't really come up with a thing right now. But when I watch the Marx Brothers, I think about the lineage of Jewish entertainers that led up to Adam Sandler and me being a Jewish kid and being like, oh, I recognize stuff of me in both Adam Sandler and the Marx Brothers, and it all feels... of a piece in some way, even though that stuff's much farther away.
Right.
So, Yeah, I don't know that I clicked literally with the Marx Brothers, but they do feel like when I see Jews doing comedy, mm-hmm. that's part of the booyah boss for me.
I can get that. It's the same reason why, seriously, as a kid, I wanted to be Jewish, and except for the religion part, because I was not very religious. I'm like, can I be Jewish but not Jewish? Like, I really, as a kid, was like, everybody I loved growing up was Jewish, and I'm just like, I did. So, thank you, by the way, for my friend Brett, who made me an honorary Jew. It's very nice of him.
Oh, yeah.
I asked him to please make me an honorary Jew, and he did.
Great.
It was very kind of him.
That's great.
You know, real quick, just to link the Marx Brothers to rap, it's now occurring to me that the Humpty Dance, he's wearing fucking Groucho glasses and nose. Not the mustache. The mustache is not attached, but just occurred to me.
That's great.
Yeah, right? It's a good link between the Marx Brothers and rap.
That's really good.
Right?
There's got to be some other... I've been racking my brains while we've been talking for some other...
Like lyrics or a reference to...
reference.
Yeah, because I wonder. There's got to be somebody that's that hip.
Even the Beastie Boy.
Ooh, yeah, huh?
That seems like the most likely.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't come up with it.
All right, well,
that's great.
It's your
Shock
job
G
now.
And mm-hmm. Humpty Hump.
I was in the Plaza Hotel, and there's a priest standing there. And he recognizes me. He says, "Aren't you Groucho Marx?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "My mother's crazy about that quiz show you do." And I said to him, "I didn't know you fellas had mothers." And I continued, I said, "I always thought it was Immaculate Conception." Then I was in Montreal. I made a quick exit out of the elevator. I was in Montreal, and a priest comes up to me, puts out his hand, he says, "I want to thank you for all the joy you put into this world." And I shook his hand, and I said, "And I want to thank you for all the joy you've taken out of this world." He said, "Could I use that next Sunday in my sermon?" I said, "Yes, you can, but you'll have to pay the William Morris office 10%.
My sketch comedy group, we bought a bunch of those Groucho noses at one point for some random thing or other, and they were like generically brand named Beagle Puss. Have you heard that before?
No.
Yeah.
No. I feel like I should be offended at it.
Yeah.
I feel like I should be offended.
I mean...
because the joke's not that it's a big nose. It's that it kind of-ish looks like... it's going to make it look like Groucho. Although, honestly, where you know, I mean, he didn't... It's the mustache was the thing, and the glasses.
The mustache. What is the mustache? Just a strip of...
100% grease paint.
Oh, it's paint?
Yeah. And he also did it over his eyebrows. I don't know if he did it in this. A little bit. They're
really?
For
it's
sure.
Not like felt or something?
I know. I used to think that as a kid, but no, grease paint. You can see in some of the old... if you get a higher def version of them, you can see it's shining off of his lip and stuff. So it's strong grease paint.
I did not know that.
But in this, like in the 70s, he'd actually grown out an official mustache since like the 50s and stuff.
Huh.
So at that point, he was like, "Fuck that. I don't need grease paint anymore."
Oh, yeah. He was a cool-looking old dude.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He's just a hip motherfucker.
He's really hip.
I can't imagine he was much of a smoker other than cigars, because his voice never really seemed to get gravelly or change. Like, if you smoke cigars, it's not going to do so much damage to your lungs. So I assume he wasn't. I assume the cigar was more of a prop.
Huh.
The cigar or the turd, as it were. what is written around his cigar? Oh, it's just another quote.
It's another quote. "I have taken the most beautiful picture of Groucho. Not the one used in this album. No hat, no cigar, no jokes. His face is the face of a sensitive, intellectual, and deeply feeling man. And it is one of my truest portraits. Richard Avedon."
It's awesome.
That's cool.
There's a lot of really good quotes in there. By people who were still alive at the time. That's the other weird thing, is that there is this group of folks who died out in the 70s that we will never get. And that's why this is like a really good snapshot to have.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's right.
I mean, as much as I love having his stuff, his early stuff, also, there are no really good compilations of Marx Brothers stuff early on. Like this one over here that I listened to it earlier. Like I said, it's got a fucking narrator telling me why it's funny. Just give me the clips.
That's a terrible choice.
I do have another one that is a bootleg that is harder to get a hold of. It is a bootleg Groucho album that came out in the 70s by this bootleg company. Like, they made bootleg albums.
Oh, really?
And it's all the really good Groucho shit without some bullshit interruptions.
Oh, great.
So
that's much better.
That's really what you should be listening to. We got to do that as an episode sometime, because
that would be great.
Yeah.
Do you ever tell people this is what you're gonna listen to?
You know, I've been thinking about it because people have been like picking like Adam Sandler or this, and A, I'm never listening to another Adam Sandler album for this show because I've done it too many times. B, didn't release on vinyl, and I originally gave I gave people a lot of room, and I was like, yeah, okay, we'll talk about that CD, that's fine, but some people are like, you know, you really should stick to the vinyl. I'm like, you know, here's my solution. You can talk about your influence that was on CD or tape or whatever, but you are going to listen. Pick an album. What I did with you. You know, pick an album you want to talk about.
Here's what I'll say.
Yeah.
I loved the experience of listening to a rip of a vinyl.
Uh-huh.
It's just, whether or not this is true for you, I know people are like, think about vinyl, you know, like, ah, who cares? Like, you know, whatever. MP3s are great. It's terrific. But listening to that on vinyl did give me like a warm, cozy, back 100%. To childhood kind of feeling.
Yeah.
And it was a pleasure to. I don't listen to anything on vinyl.
Yeah.
I don't own a record player.
Right.
Everything I listen to is crisp, clean,
sure,
slick MP3. And yeah, it was great.
That's one of the things well, I guess I don't talk about it as much because I think it would bore my audience if I kept bringing it up. It's fine if a guest does because it's like they have their own way to express that. Mm-hmm. I feel like I am taking it for granted because I've, again, 4.5 years of doing this thing. Like, yeah. I listen to a lot of this stuff unless I'm rushing and having to find a digital copy, which again, I'm going to apologize for that 60 cycle hum in the
totally
track that you had. But it was like, oh, but it's still, you can hear it's very vinyl-y. Mine popped and skipped a couple times when I listened to it earlier because the MP3 wasn't loud enough, so I said I threw on the actual vinyl. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. And it's comforting to do that, even though you have to flip it because there's two fucking discs. So if you guys are buying this, you can get it super cheap, by the way. This is really, really common to find. Mm. There's also a picture disc that's worth a little bit more, so those run you like $15. The picture disc is awesome, though. It's really
what does that mean?
Good art. Just a picture on the record itself.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's really
a picture
sometimes
disc.
Yeah.
I know.
You've never seen one?
No.
I've got a couple. I'll show
new
you.
Term. I'd love to see them.
They're fantastic.
Can I ask two quick questions?
Yeah, 100%.
I just cut you off of a thought.
No, you didn't. I was trying to come up with a thought. Go ahead.
Okay. First question.
Yes.
What? Just real quickly, I'm genuinely curious. It's not a what's wrong with Adam Sandler, but like, what is? Do you? You're not. It sounds like you aren't crazy about his stuff.
The people who liked Adam Sandler when I was growing up, I was listening to Cheech and Chong and other shit, and I just by very nature being picked on or not liking these people, I hated Adam Sandler at the time. However, I gave it a shot for this, and we just can't do it ever again because we've covered it enough.
Yep.
And I'm trying to make people discover old shit. Yeah. And I'm forcing my taste on other people. That's
part
of
good.
It.
That's good. That should be part of it.
But another thing is like that you can only examine his stuff so far. Other than production value. Gorgeously produced.
Huh.
But the comedy for me, I just don't I will have nothing to contribute if we did they're all going to laugh at you one or two more times.
Right.
It would just be and I don't want any more episodes.
That doesn't sound good.
Because I've done them, and they're fine. Because people have great stories and interesting stories, but they're not dissimilar to like brilliant people have picked like Adam Sandler. Peter Atencio came on. He had plenty to say because he's a genius.
Yeah.
But eventually I'm just going to get bored of it, and I don't want to be bored because my audience doesn't want to be bored anyway. Sorry.
I mean, it's a real distillation of the entity that was waiting to become Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
So, like, you get all that stuff, and it's really funny. It made a movie career that is still going strong.
Yeah.
And, man, when it was in that raw, early, hungry, like, here it is, notice it form, it just grabbed me. But I totally
get that.
As an adult, you're like, I don't need to talk about this because now we have Adam Sandler. Like, he's still around and he's a thing now.
Mm-hmm.
This is listening to it. I guess I don't think it doesn't seem like he's gone, with a couple exceptions. Punch Drunk Love was great. I don't think he's gone to like much greater.
No,
he's just like a very commercially successful actor.
Yeah, yeah.
But I listened to it again and I couldn't believe how I kind of like it, but the endings of the sketches are just terrible.
Oh,
they end with literally a fart noise. And then that's how we get out of there.
100%.
My other question is who are like the heroes that you've really had on the podcast?
Oh God, you know what's funny? Last night. Just out of by coincidence, just because of just some things that have been happening, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take like 10 minutes and just write down shit that's happened to me because of this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And like, this is just the beginning of the list, but like, one of the first people who James Urbaniak. I love James Urbaniak. And like, a lot of my voice heroes. Billy West was on here a couple weeks ago. We sat for 2.5 hours.
Wow.
He's brilliant, genius, crazy person in the best sense of the word.
Wow.
There's so many people, and I've also met like people who are like historically quite important in terms of comedy, like Rusty Warren, who, while she didn't influence my comedy, nobody else has really interviewed her. Huh. So I sat down for an hour and a half. And
who is she?
She did, like, Party Records, is the best way to put it. Like, she didn't work quite blue, but because she was a woman talking about sex, it was kind of pigeonholed in it as though she was dirty. But she wasn't. She was no more dirty than any of the dudes out there.
Sure.
And, in fact, a little more creative than a lot of them were.
Huh.
And a super feminist. And it was fun to talk to her for an hour and a half about that. And about feminism in maybe non-specific terms, but it was interesting. Members of the Firesign Theater, obviously, who I'm kind of buddies with now.
Great.
That's the hard part. Thinking about it last night, I realized if you cannot remember all the amazing shit that's happened to you because of this podcast, a lot of amazing shit has happened to you on this podcast.
That's a good sign.
You know, I'm not intentionally trying to leave anybody out, but like I know that there's a ton of people. As a result, though, I've also met people who haven't been on the show. Like I got to meet Dave Foley, who's a fucking god to me.
Did you keep it together or did you geek out?
Oh no, I did, surprisingly.
Great.
And I got to take a picture with him, and I asked him, is cupping allowed? And he said yes. So getting to make a joke to Dave Foley and have him bounce off of it was like, oh fuck, I can die now.
Great.
You know,
I keep waiting. What's cupping a reference to?
Since there's a picture, like I was just asking if I could cup his balls.
Oh, okay. And it's not a specific Dave Foley thing.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, okay.
But he knew. He could sense
it
because he's a genius. Waiting for him to do the show. There are a lot of guys. Weird Al is the ultimate, by the way. If Weird Al did the show, I could quit. Weird Al or Mel Brooks, you know.
Oh, man.
If they did the show.
Can I share a Weird Al story?
Oh, yeah, please do.
He appeared in one of the epic rap battles of history.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he's fucking fantastic in it.
I wrote, some episodes I come and go and I don't even know. Like you said at the beginning, I'm like, I write on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And some episodes just come and go and I like I was out of town or, you know, they had it handled. Others, I'll pitch a bunch of jokes and maybe, you know, one or two will make it in. And then others, like whole swaths of material, they'll just put in with minor tweaks. And
sure.
So it's just, you know, I bet that's a common thing. This is the only staff writing position I've had, but I'm sure that's a common thing.
Sure.
The Weird Al one, it just happened that like a bunch of my stuff made it in. And so I was on the road at the time and they were like, can you do a demo for us to send to Al to practice? And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, my God. This is crazy. He was big.
Uh-huh.
And so I recorded a demo. And when I recorded it, I wanted to do it like I thought Al should do it. And it was rap. And so I kind of like enunciated certain words certain ways. And like, but I didn't want to make him feel like I was making fun of him.
Sure.
Or for him to recognize totally that I was doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, I just wanted it to be a little bit of like a gentle suggestion of here's how I think you might approach this. And then I got to go. They were like, do you want to come to the vocal recording session? Normally when it's a VIP, they were like, they try and keep it just the two, Prince, the guy, Lloyd and Pete, the guys who do the series and whoever it is for maximum comfort of the guest. But they were like, yeah, if you come in and, you know, just be chill. And so I go to the recording session and I'm in the control room of their studio with them and Al's in the vocal booth. And he starts doing it. And I was like, I can tell that he is impersonating the demo, which was my impersonation of him.
Holy shit.
And I was like, this is great.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it was so cool to watch him in the booth. Mm-hmm. So that is the end of that story, whether or not it paid off for you. It was really cool for me to get to see. And then just watching him in the booth, he was such a every take. I mean, it's always inspiring when you see a performer doing something over and over again and they bring something new every time. But he was really good at it.
Yeah.
Every take, he would take their direction and give something else to work with.
Did he do it kind of single breath like he's notoriously done for? Like he'll, not single breath, but like pretty much one take through and he'll have it, but then just take notes? Because I know like White and Nerdy supposedly did it the whole way through and then they would just, nope, let's do the song the whole way through again, just because he's got that kind of a brain. I'm just curious. Yeah. I don't
have a specific memory of that.
Okay.
But I will
just
tell
curious.
You one story that I don't want to share on the podcast once we stop recording.
Okay, that's absolutely fine. Absolutely fine.
Yep.
But yeah,
but remind me to do that.
Weird Al
You'll
needs
like
to do the show. I think I've begged several times for him to do the show. I've met him twice.
That's
now. That's great to meet him at all.
Yeah.
Like that I got to meet him and tell him how important he was to me and be in one of his music videos.
Really? Which one?
Yeah. Born This Way. Perform This Way. Sorry, Born This Way. Yeah, I'm a Photog.
Oh, cool.
It's a photog. Who the fuck am I?
I will say to anybody who we don't, let's not even say who it is, mm-hmm. but anybody who has not watched the White and Nerdy music video in a long time, the two thugs who roll up on him at the beginning of it, you should watch it and see if you recognize them from anything they may have gone on to do in showbiz.
Yeah, maybe. Probably a good thing.
It'll be fun if you like White and Nerdy but don't know who I'm talking about.
100%. So normally at the end of an episode, I've got to find a new way to sort of like phrase it now, but I know I don't. It's the same. If you're going to recommend this album to listen to, would you recommend it as a first thing if somebody hasn't heard the Marx Brothers, or would you be like, pick this up after you've gotten familiar with their other material?
I mean, I think we said it before that you really have to already have a relationship to the bros. I think.
Yeah.
If
I agree.
Yeah, if this was your first exposure, I think you would not understand what the fuss was about.
Yeah, and watch them first, though. Like, I know that we're always talking about how important it is to listen to this stuff, but watch them. The Marx Brothers have to be watched.
Yeah, this is a unique record. I mean, this is a different kind of, I think, record to pick, because it doesn't exactly stand on its own as its own thing.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You do have to have that reference point.
And that's why I think calling it An Evening With is a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
You've already spent some kind of time with him.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd have to look up his discography, but I'm fairly certain this is the last thing. I mean, it's the only album he ever recorded for the sake of an album, which is cool. That's another reason why it's interesting. If you can find the picture disc, find the picture disc. So do listen to it. Do you have anything to promote? I will warn you, I have no idea when this is coming out.
Oh, I just will direct people to my Twitter feed and my YouTube page, which is where I like to do. Those are the two places I'm happiest making things, and especially the YouTube page. And they're both Zach Sherwin, Z-A-C-H, and then Sherwin.
That's awesome.
Standard spelling.
That's easy enough. I will very quickly, because again, I do not know when this is coming out. You guys should go to the Million McFly March, which is October 21st, 2015. That is a Parkinson's benefit that I am organizing. You need to go dress up like Marty McFly. You need to come along. If you can't afford to donate, don't donate. It's fine. Show up. Show your support for the other people who are donating. You can go to millionmcflymarch.com, which I may have already said, or just go to stolendress.com. It's up there too. And donate, please. Well, Zach, thank you for doing this.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was really fun to do.
Good. I'm glad you had a fun time. And you're welcome to come back anytime.
Thanks, man.
You know, we do Groucho again or something, another Marx Brothers.
Switch it up.
I'm interested in doing this other album, even though it's horrible, because the clips are really good. If you can ignore, as good as, I'm pretty sure it's Paul Frees, who's a great voiceover artist. Like, he was just, he's out of place on it. Anyway, we'll do another Marx Brothers, too.
But not Harpo's solo.
Yeah, that one's rough. That is
Dad.
You have no idea how much I love the idea. Like, how many times I've written, like, wouldn't it be funny if a mime did a record joke? Like, how many times I've written that same, I love that joke. I've always, but again, it's a fucking dad joke. It's fine. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com.